Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, the RNA vaccine injuries and deaths in the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events database, are they accurate? Are being told the truth? My guest, Dr. Jessica Rose, says no. She's an immunologist, a molecular biologist. She's a scientist. She is also specializing in computational biology and the biomechanisms behind pathogenic infections. This is her area of specialization. Multiple peer-reviewed articles published, no controversy in her background, outstanding scientific work, and she is saying that we have been lied to. My guest now, Dr. Jessica Rose. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be back.
You were here in May, so that's many months ago. And during that time, we've seen COVID vaccine injury cases and deaths increase substantially. And during that time, a whistleblower has also come forward with evidence showing that the actual number of vaccine deaths is grossly being underreported, not just by the government, but by virtually all of the media, including alternative media. Now, on yesterday's program, I made a statement that I did not have the time, since it was the very end of the program, where I said that they're lying to us, or they're presenting inaccurate information. It can be both. And now today I'm unfolding that to be very specific. So in this case, I would like for you to unpack for us, as you have it before in lay language, what it means when a person believes the government figures, believes the media, as a substantial part of the population does, and therefore doesn't do their own individual homework. Maybe they don't know how, maybe they don't know what to look for. But the government has assured us of the following of facts, in their mind facts, that this vaccine was 95% effective. That meant in most people's minds that, hey, if I get the vaccine, I'm not going to get the virus, because we were told this vaccine would allow life to go back to normal. So just the vaccine, nothing else. In fact, and I'm not going to address this with you because this is not in your area of expertise, but my question was, doctors all over the world every day are treating illnesses of every type, including traumas and injuries and chronic and systemic diseases, with the tools they have. You won't go into any hospital emergency room and they'll say, well, wait till you're almost dead, then come back and we'll do something. They immediately go into action and they save lives, and I consider them great heroes for doing that. But with this particular pandemic, we were told and instructed as a certainty that nothing would work. Stay at home, quarantine until you're so sick you have to go to the hospital. And at that point, a person may have been sick for 1, 2, or 3 weeks. So when they entered the hospital, they frequently had advanced pulmonary conditions and therefore had to be put on ventilators. And that was not all that successful. And then we were told there were very few deaths. And then we were told there were no deaths. So that's where you come in. So please take your time. I will not interrupt you, and address this serious problem of underreporting vaccine injuries and deaths. And could it just be by accident, or do you believe that some of this was intentional? The forum is yours.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot to unpack. First of all, underreporting in adverse event collection data systems is a known concept. This has actually even been studied. It's known. There is a certain percentage of people within a population who, if they suffer an adverse event, will report. So we don't know exactly what the underreporting factor in this particular, let's call it a system, is. And by system, I mean the adverse events being collected in the context of the COVID products in the United States of America. So I guess I'm going to go backwards from your comments And then I'll do an overview. So on the subject of the media, it's the media. It's more like a show. It seems like there is no journalism going on for real. And there's a good reason for that. It's because they're funded by the pharma companies who stand to profit. So there's a conflict of interest there, if you will. So it's not in their best interest to report the facts. It's in their best interest to report what's best for the people who are funding them. So it's a shame that that's how it is, but that's how it is. That's a known thing as well. On the subject of prevention, even if we don't talk about pharmaceuticals, if we talk about maintaining a healthy immune system by maintaining vitamin D levels, and zinc levels, and vitamin C levels, etc., eating a healthy diet, that's not profitable. So why would that be promoted? It would also, if we had a very healthy, strong population, it would also put a damper on you know, vaccine programs, pharmaceutical companies, etc. It's kind of the same theme. On the subject of the program that hospital workers have to go by when somebody comes into the hospital with suspected COVID, for example, I have a personal story I can tell about this. I have a very good friend here who has who also has a friend with a father who actually was 83. He got COVID and he had some symptoms. So they thought they would do the right thing and they went to the hospital and he was okay. I mean, he was breathing, but they had a program that they had to follow when somebody comes into the unit or the hospital, I should say, with suspected COVID. Sometimes without even being tested, they get taken to a certain ward and eventually they can end up being advised to go on a ventilator or take antiviral drugs, which at the point where you're seeing symptoms for most people is pointless because the viral load is not the problem anymore. It's the inflammation. There's a protocol that they have to follow. Not sure where that comes from, but I know that this is true because I have, like I'm telling you, I have a friend whose father was almost forced to be on a ventilator and he was mortified by this. So he said, no, I'm leaving this hospital. I'll go get better at home or I'll die at home. But either way, I'm going to choose. He's fine, by the way, as far as I know. So, there's some kind of strange disconnect there between doctors doing good doctoring and doctors following protocols. Next was if you get the injections, you won't get the virus. Wrong, false. The so-called breakthrough infections, which can also equate to a vaccine failure, by definition, is when you get the virus, for example, that you're trying not to get by getting vaccinated. It's called a breakthrough infection. So the rates, according to VAERS reports, are very high. They are at, I can tell you exactly how high if I can find my list. They are at 22,155 reported cases. And this does not consider any underreporting factor that we're going to discuss further. And the numbers are going up every week. For those of you who don't know, the VAERS data set is uploaded, fresh data is uploaded every week. And the FDA and the CDC are in charge of this data, which brings me down to almost the last point, which is the strange disconnect between people trusting the government and not trusting the government data. which is, it doesn't make sense to me. Maybe it's because people aren't aware of VAERS, or maybe they're not aware that VAERS is actually the brainchild of the FDA and the CDC. But now you know. And if you simply go into onto the VAERS website, you can download all the data for yourself. That's what I do every week. And you can, you don't have to have any great skills. You can just use Excel and count how many deaths there are, for example. And we're currently at a very, very conservative estimate of 8,606, which is a lot of people, even if you do not consider the underreporting factor. So I think I might have mentioned this the last time we spoke, but it bears repeating. It really bears repeating. It bears repeating loudly. And then a question needs to be asked. The last time a vaccine was rolled out into the human population and caused death, it was absolutely halted immediately when the death count rose above 50, or 53 deaths. It was this H1N1 product. It was deemed unsafe after 53 people died from the product. Just like that. They're in control. They have the power to stop it. So if we're at a very conservative 8,606 Americans who have not only died, but managed to get reports into VAERS and have them stay there, that's another subject we can talk about. That is enormously high. It's much higher than 50. So the question that I'm asking the people who are in charge of this data, these data sets, and every single human being alive is, what is the cutoff number for the people who are dying in the context of the COVID products? Because there doesn't appear to be one. And if there doesn't, if there is no cutoff number, why is there no cutoff number? Why is it okay for the death rate due to the products to be higher in certain age groups or risk groups than COVID itself? You know, this is actually a valid question now. We have enough data to be able to ask that question. For example, in children, the death rate is so low, it's negligible. COVID-19 has never been an issue for our young people. Never. Everybody knows this. It's widely known. The WHO admits it. The CDC admits it. FDA, everybody, all the three-letter people admit this. This is a truth. It's not a problem. And we're very, very lucky about that, by the way. I've been saying that for over a year. We're very lucky that this doesn't affect children. Imagine if it did. It doesn't. We're lucky. We should take advantage of that. And we shouldn't be proceeding the way that we are. So now this touches on the subject of the injection rollout into children. There's another VRBPAC meeting on the 26th, and I'm hoping to be one of the panelists to speak to the FDA on this again. And this is on the subject of making this allowing the Moderna and the Janssen products, I believe, to be injected into children, young children. So there's no, absolutely no justification for this, and there's no safety data to reflect that this is even safe to do in our kids. But I mean, more importantly, from my point of view, from a logical point of view, if kids are fine because their immune systems are strong, why would they need this? They don't. Period. End of story. So on the subject of the underreporting factor, there have been a number of estimates made. I, in fact, came up with one myself in my most recent paper on pharmacovigilance. It's just in the discussion. It wasn't one of the main points of the paper. But just if people are interested, I used the phase 3 clinical trial data from Pfizer. And the way that I estimated it was to take their severe adverse event rate, which is calculated by dividing the number of people in the drug, let's call it, arm, who succumbed to a severe adverse event divided by the total number, and multiply that by the number of people who were injected at a certain time. So this would give you what I call the expected number of people who would succumb to a severe adverse event. And then what you do when you have this number is you divide it by the number of severe adverse events that are reported to VAERS. And then you come up with a multiplication factor or the underreporting factor. And my estimate was 31. Steve Kirsch has actually approximated this to be 41, and his base data set came from a JAMA allergy study or an anaphylaxis study. And another paper recently came out on the subject of injecting children that puts this underreporting factor close to 100. So the point is, we don't know exactly what it is yet, and it's going to vary depending on base data sets. And also on the number of observed severe adverse events, or whichever adverse event you're selecting, it will depend on that. But we're honing in on that. That's the point, and it's kind of an exciting thing if we want to be morbid about our data analysis. Sometimes we need to look at the positives of what we're going through. So for perhaps the first time, we're going to be able to approximate the underreporting factor with a little more precision. But safe to say, this is a very real thing. And I just want to say, though, it's a very real thing, and it's an important thing, but we don't even need it. We don't even need to multiply the numbers of adverse events, the standalone or the grouped adverse events, because the numbers are so high already. I mean, the truth stands alone. We don't need to exaggerate. I'm not saying that that would be an exaggeration, but we don't need to do anything else but just look at the raw data. Perhaps that's the most important point I could make on that subject.
Let's focus for a moment there, please. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at this data, I saw a paper. It was a paper, not a peer review paper. It was with three of you who had written it based upon what you felt was a more accurate number of people in America who have died or been injured. Could you share that data with us, please?
Well, that relies on Steve Kirsch's approximate of 40 or estimation of 41 as the underreporting factor. So basically, all you have to do is you accept that as being a good estimate, and then you multiply that by the number of deaths, for example, if you want to speak of deaths reported to VAERS, and it brings your number close to something close to 200,000. My internal math is not the best, but it's a very high number of people when you're talking about a product or products that are being talked about with such heroic language. I mean, the vaccines are the only option. I hear that language. The vaccines are the solution. We can't get out of the situation without the vaccines. And it's the truth of the matter is that they're causing a lot of damage in a proportion of people who are being injected. That's a fact. Okay, and every single person does matter, especially in this case, because there is no informed consent for the most part, and there's a lot of coercion going on. Every single case matters. And on that subject, there's been a movie that recently came out of Israel by an independent voice called Testimonies. And it's a group of people who are from Israel who are telling the stories of their their injuries. And I watched it, and then I watched it again, and then I watched it again. And I was astounded at two things, at the broadness of the adverse events. And in VAERS currently, we have over 10,000 different types of adverse event reports. These are, they're called MEDRA codes. And this is the technical term that you call, or the diagnosis of the side effect that somebody reports to VAERS. Over 10,000 different types, unheard of. And the second thing that was astounding from the testimonials was the degree of injury. There were people in wheelchairs. There were people talking about, I'm waiting for the third stroke to come to finish me off. People who aren't even 50 years old. Women suffering miscarriages. Women who've had many babies before and never had a problem. Now, I'm not saying that miscarriages don't happen, but according to VAERS, these numbers are, they're growing, first of all, and they're above background. And I mean, maybe I should stick to VAERS, but I will point out that there was a paper that was published recently that claimed that there's no risk to pregnant women. And it turned out, and this is very important for people to know, Byron Bridle actually does a really beautiful explanation of how they were kind of caught with their pants pulled down. Somebody read their paper and noticed in table four, in the small writing at the bottom, that a huge proportion of the cohort of pregnant women were in their third trimester. So if you considered women in their first and second trimesters only, which is a lot of women who are in their first and second trimester who read that paper who hear being pumped in the news or in the media that it's safe, might go and get injected. But what they won't know is that 82%, when you change that denominator, it becomes 82% of women in their study suffered a miscarriage in their first and second trimesters. I mean, that's astounding. That's astounding. And all women need to know that. And that's just on miscarriages. That's not talking about dysmenorrhea, amenorrhea, women who are 93 years old having atypical uterine bleeding. I mean, there are a lot of strange things going on in VAERS that really should be being talked about, like explosively.
Let's refocus for a moment, please.
Sure.
It is not unusual to see the type of manipulation you're discussing. In fact, I'll give you a classic example. For decades, we were told that genetically modified foods and genetically modified chemicals, including pesticides like glyphosate or Roundup, presented no harm. There was no evidence. There's lots of scientific studies showing they were safe. So I looked at the studies, and I called Richard Guy. I said, Richard, what do you know? And I've done 49 clinical studies. And I said, Richard, what's the first thing that jumps out at you when you read how many studies they've done? There were a lot of studies that Monsanto did. I said, they're all short-term studies, 3 months, 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
I said, working in a laboratory as a senior research fellow for 33 years at the Institute of Applied Biology, I can tell you something. You don't stop a study at 90 days. You have to take it to the full length of the rat's life. And he said, yeah. Well, guess what? Not a single study anywhere from anyone involving pesticides showed that, or genetically modified food, showed that it causes any problems under 90 days. So a Dr. Seralini and a group of scientists in France, they decided to do the same identical study, except let the animals, in this case rats, live their full lifespan. And what did they find? Mammary tumors, massive tumors, all types of tumors, 16 different types of cancer, once they got past that 90 days. So am I supposed to believe that they didn't, and all the people making these products didn't know that if you go past 90 days, then you're going to have a problem? So if you ask me, did anyone suspect that if they took the first and second trimester when a person's most likely to have a miscarriage, and they take the third trimester where they're least likely to have it, they're going to go full term, then you're going to come up with different figures. No, that stretches the imagination. That goes beyond probability. So that shows that what they're doing is not a unique or an exception here. They've done it before in other cases with other products. Separately, you said we should be talking loudly about this. You are right. But why is it with thousands of members of the media, highly educated, top schools, lots of intellectual capacity, unlimited resources, they can reach out to anyone they want if you're from the New York Times or CNN and get a story. Why is it not a single one of those publications have focused upon what you just said? A woman who has a 30-day period and she's expelling blood clots the size of grapes, and another one who had nonstop bleeding until she was hospitalized. What about the young men and women who are teenagers, healthy, athletic, take the vaccine and suddenly they have all forms of inflammation in the heart, which could be permanent and lead to death, and in fact has. But not a single person has been interviewed to highlight the dangers to these people. No one with Guillain-Barré syndrome. None of this. At least Mike Wallace brought a victim of Guillain-Barré from the swine flu vaccine back in 1976 when 40 million Americans were vaccinated, and they stopped it. But at least there was a public forum, 60 Minutes, a major one, where you told the truth, and then they put the CDC director on mic, and he was fumbling all over the place. But you don't see Anthony Fauci challenged by anyone. You don't see Dr. Peter McCullough allowed to debate Anthony Fauci. And by the way, Fauci knows this because a friend of mine, you may know him or know of him or his work, Kerry Mullis. He got the Nobel Prize in 1996 for in chemistry for discovering the PCR. And Kerry Mullis, in an interview, which you can see, it's a long interview, over an hour and a half, I did with him in 1996. He said, I tried to debate Anthony Fauci. University of South Carolina president wanted us on stage to show both sides of an issue. And I said that my PCR test should never be used as a diagnostic tool because it can't tell you. It is not to be used for that. It's good for other things, but not at these amplifications. No one is willing to debate. None of the media are willing to debate. They're there to praise, but no one is looking at any of the adverse data. So when no one's looking at any of this data, you're saying approximately more or less 200,000 dead Americans, then by exponential relationship to serious illnesses, you're talking about several million. So when you're injuring or causing the death of more people than American soldiers in World War I, or twice as many, as many soldiers as died in World War I and the Vietnam War combined, and not a single editorial, not a single investigation, not a single congressional hearing showing you this. And also, if you want to know another good example of this, why don't we take a look at all the parents and the children of those parents. You're talking now about 9 million Americans, all right? They were completely healthy and normal. They got the MMR vaccine, and then they started showing abnormalities, and many of those abnormalities ended up being diagnosed by neurologists as autism spectrum disorder. But the manufacturer said no. The government, the CDC said no. All of media said no, and you were attacked if you suggested such a connection. Now, those parents, and I've interviewed over 1,000 of them. I did a film called Autism Made in USA. I did another documentary called The Silent Epidemic, another documentary, Deadly Deceit, another documentary, Vaccine Made in USA. Excuse me. And what I showed was that none of these parents were taken seriously when they went to their doctor or the hospital or pharmacist and said, I took the vaccine, now here's what my child did, and here's what they're experiencing. So first there was denial. Can't be us. Can't be the vaccine. But it was. In fact, the Justice Department runs the compensation program, and you're not allowed to bring in witnesses. You can't bring in the evidence. And if you don't file within a certain period of time, a very short period of time, then the statute of limitations to run, and a lot of vaccine adverse effects doesn't occur for a year, 2 years, 3 years. And yet already we're told, perfect vaccine, got FDA approval, Why don't you look at all the other drugs that got FDA approval that later had to be retracted to black box because they were wrong? They rushed into there. So we have a history in this country of denying people the reality. As one woman I filmed in Chicago said, she said, "I feel terrible because I'm a medical doctor. I'm a pediatrician. I vaccinated my own child. And this is the result. He has diarrhea 10 hours a day. I can't take him outside because if I take him outside, he screams inconsolably. And then people think somehow he's being abused and call the police. So I'm having to be with him 24/7. I have to have my husband work one hour, a shift a day. And I've talked to several couples to this. They had to take care of him because insurance is not covering it. And they have to do this the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be possible, only a possibility, that if you ask these people to take an experimental vaccine and give it to their child, which is what they're advocating, they just, I saw it today in the New York Times, they're advocating that even if you've been vaccinated, that you can take this vaccine. And even if you have natural immunity because you've gotten COVID, it's better to take the vaccine. And I'm saying, where is your studies to prove this? You're making editorial statements. You have no scientific proof of this. There's no studies been done yet. In fact, the studies that have been done, there are 20 of them, 20 and counting, show that if you have natural immunity for having gotten the gotten the COVID, that you're far hardier in your immune system than if you just got the vaccine by itself. And there's no study showing what might happen if you take the vaccine after having COVID to cause an autoimmune condition. You're experimenting with people. Could you address any of those issues, please?
Yeah, that's all correct. I mean, there hasn't been enough time to address the latter comment. And actually, I was just doing a literature review of the robust and long-lasting immunity that you get naturally if you just get COVID. And by the way, there are a lot of people I've heard give testimony that they much, if they knew now what they knew, if they had known back then what they know now, they never would have gotten the injections. They would have much preferred to get COVID. The immune system is a beautiful thing and it works. And like I said before, there are risk groups associated with SARS virus, but we know what they are and we know how to treat them. We have beautiful treatment protocols now. In Israel now, they're pushing. They're not just saying that it's a suggestion. They're pushing people who have natural immunity. They got COVID. They got over it. They feel great to get an injection. And if they do, they will be offered a green passport. So it's like a weird immune system gamble bribe. It's very strange. It doesn't make any sense to an immunologist that you would do anything beyond what your immune system does naturally. It's bizarre to me. It's absolutely bizarre. There are many published studies. There have been. I mean, this isn't a new thing in the context of other products as well. I'm trying to remember what you were talking about. It's shocking, really. I mean, what's going on here? And by the way, I mean, there are worse things than death. And I get to see that when I'm looking through this VAERS data. The number of people who are becoming disabled, I mentioned wheelchairs before. If you're an athlete, for example, and you're on a team and your coach or whatever is saying you can't be on the team anymore, or you can't be an Olympic athlete, or I'm not sure if they're imposing this, but I can see that happening. If you don't get the injections and then you get maimed, or even if your performance goes down because you develop a heart problem, I mean, It's kind of mind blowing to me. It really is. I even lost my thought. So the people, there are a large number of people becoming debilitated. There are a large number of people who are sustaining birth defects. large number of people who can't do their daily life anymore. So I'll give you another example.
Let me give you one more example to highlight this.
Sure.
The parents that I've interviewed saying that the government betrayed him, the medical community betrayed him, the pharmacist betrayed him, the nurses betrayed him, because after giving their injections to these children, they wouldn't take any responsibility for what was an actual clinical manifestation of an effect from the vaccines. So now, are you going to ask those same people, oh, come and take this vaccine, trust us this time. We realize your kid got autism, but now you can trust us. These people are going to say, no, I trusted you. I was pro-vaccine, but you betrayed us. You didn't tell us the truth. So that's one large group of people that you're talking about. You're talking about at least 5 million adults. That's a good segment. Now, also, what about all the young people who every study that I can find shows that young people are not at risk as any statistically significant number from COVID itself, and now they're pushing heavy. In fact, yesterday when I was doing a commentary, starting a commentary, but had to end, and I didn't get the context out, unfortunately, I was going to say that now that everything in the news every day is COVID for your kids, COVID for your kids. Then Fauci said again yesterday, masks inside now. And yet every virologist knows that the COVID virus is so small that the mask cannot possibly filter all those viruses from getting in. And yet they're saying, well, even asymptomatic are the biggest spreaders. And I looked at all the scientific data. And do you know what the asymptomatic spread of the virus is? 0.7%, not even 1%. So if a person is not manifesting clinical symptoms, then the amount of virus in their lungs, in their throat, and in their nose is not going to be the primary cause of spreading. The primary cause is in institutional settings, hospitals, nursing homes, places where people are in a confined area with sick people. You bring in someone who's infected, and that's what happened in New York State based upon Governor Cuomo, and suddenly everybody gets infected. They already had the comorbidities. And of course, when a doctor has signed off on a death certificate, you don't have just one cause of death. You can also have secondary causes of death. And this is very close to me because it was a member of my family. A person died because of acute diarrhea from a drug that was given, a chemotherapy drug, from what was considered secondary, and that was terminal stomach cancer. So if you put what actually caused his death, well, it was the stomach cancer, but it was the diarrhea that triggered it. So imagine having two or three comorbidities and then being tested with a PCR test, and you test positive, and then it's suddenly cause of death, COVID, instead of the primary reasons you're at your life in, you're in a nursing home, you're in hospice care. They're even calling hospice care patients COVID. So the average person looking at all this saying there's just too much misinformation. Now, certainly a lot of it is accidental. Some is innocently given, trusting. Many doctors, nurses have initially trusted. So why are there so many nurses and doctors questioning? Because maybe they're the ones seeing this. And in the case of Gardasil, that's another good example. Yeah. We were promised that it would be safe and you could prevent cervical cancer. So I interviewed the woman who invented it, right? And mm-hmm. she was very clear about this. It's a mathematical model. And a young 13-year-old getting this, antibodies only last for 4 or 5 years, and some even younger than that, they already will be through their safety period by the time they become sexually active. And also 90% of all of the human papillomavirus is cleared by the body, generally within 1 to 2 years, and almost all women eventually get it. But then they started getting a market for young boys. And now you start seeing these young boys crippled. And I have a reel, and I can only put a few in the film, Vaccine Nation, where you have all these young athletic girls, prime of their life, and now they're all crippled. And not mm-hmm. a single media covered their story. I mean, you can see them. They're in bed. They're in wheelchairs. They're dying. They're not, no responsibility at all. So do you think any of those people would be concerned and maybe hesitant? Maybe the doctors, nurses who see this underreported? You mentioned virus. Now, it is a voluntary system. We interviewed five nurses from five different parts, including one in Australia, and they said the same thing. It's too time-consuming to fill these reports out.
Absolutely,
and so most of the time, we just don't fill anything out. I interviewed doctors. Same thing. And so you're underestimating, and a Harvard study, as you know, showed that anywhere from only 1 to 2% of actual total adverse effects and deaths are reported, even being extremely, even being extremely liberal in your thoughts, you could say 10%. But that means 90% are still underreported and unreported. Those figures added in, now you've got a, epidemic of vaccine adverse reactions and death. That changes the narrative. Then everybody looks guilty. The media, the CDC, and all of the other players in this. So we are now in the midst of one of the, in my personal opinion, one of the greatest injustices bordering on crimes against humanity, where we're taking young kids that they, all the science says, don't vaccinate them. More will die from the vaccine than die from COVID. Then the 400 plus that did die from COVID, when you look at what did they actually die from, the majority did not die. Only a small percentage died from COVID by itself. The majority had leukemia or cancers, obesity or heart conditions. And so when you factor that in and then realize that's what they died from, then you start even getting a lesser number. It's 99.98% survival. Well, why in the world would you even contemplate giving them? And now they want to go to five-year-olds. Now they can give it, they can give the current vaccine an R for 12 years and above. Add up how many kids we have in America from zero, from 1 year to 18. You're dealing with almost somewhere in the neighborhood of more or less 80 million people. Now from 18 to 30. Now that those two groups are generally healthy, they have vital immune systems. So why would you even consider it when the data doesn't justify it? And yet they are. And they're giving no respect at all to natural immunity. In fact, the New York Times wrote a story today with supposed vaccine, natural immunity. Like, alleged, you mean there's no proof? There's 20 studies proving it.
And plus, yeah, they're trying to erase natural immunity.
So could you address any of these issues, please?
Well, I mean, I don't think we're verging on crimes against humanity. This is crimes against humanity from what I'm seeing. I've been saying that for a long time. It doesn't make any sense. Every strange claim and every coercive technique and every so-called mandate, they're not backed by any science. They're not backed by long-term safety data. As a matter of fact, the safety data is all bad, and the efficacy data is bad. I mean, it's been known from the very beginning that this is. I actually created a new video that you can see on YouTube about the VAERS update, which addresses safety and efficacy. You should go watch that, everybody. First of all, these aren't vaccines. We didn't even say that yet. These are something else. And one of the defining features of a successful vaccine is that it provides protective immunity and reduces or nullifies transmission, so that the overall population, at the population level, the virus doesn't have a chance to get an upper hand, and it goes away. So it fails on both of these. I mean, the data is very clear. Israel put out some data recently on an explosion in the number of breakthrough cases, which equals vaccine failure. And the majority of people, over 85% across all ages, who were succumbing to COVID and ending up in the hospital were doubly dosed. And this is in comparison with people who were not. So people, it's mind-boggling to me from any perspective. If you look at the adverse event data, if you look at the facts about how vaccines are supposed to work, and how these ones aren't working, if you look at just simple things like this mask nonsense. I mean, every way you look at this, there's no science to support what is being pumped into people's brains every day from the media and from governments. I mean, it really is mind-boggling to me. Yeah, I'm not sure if I can add to your stories. It's you tell it really well. I mean,
I'm concerned about also Israel and the Netanyahu government decided to use the Pfizer vaccine exclusively, mm-hmm. and they really emphasized the importance of this as a public health measure, and probably as many as any other country, a percentage of their senior population took the vaccine. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. It is.
And they took both vaccines, but then they started to see a phenomena that no one had anticipated, and that is the breakthrough, meaning the people who did not have COVID got the vaccine not to get COVID, then got COVID after the vaccine. And now we're seeing what happens to the immune system after the vaccines, and we were told the immune system would be hardier, and we're seeing it's not. And now they're told that they have to have another booster shot, which is another vaccine, the same as the previous one, and then possibly another after that. And now we're told that the original vaccines lose their antibody protection capacity in anywhere from 3 months to 6 months. And the older you are, the lower your threshold. So you're going to have them on a regular basis. And then no one has done any science at all. There is no study in the world showing what happens if you put four vaccines into a person's body.
That's
right.
So
you're constantly triggered an immune system. What will happen to shedding? That person's now capable of shedding the virus to other people. What happens to their own immune system if they then come in contact with, for example, another pathogen, another bacteria, parasite, or virus? And I haven't seen this. Also, here's a biggie. And Jessica, women were excluded from the COVID who were pregnant. People with cancer excluded. People with heart disease excluded. So all the people with major illnesses were excluded from these studies.
Even if you smoke, you're on the exclusion criteria list.
And yet, when the vaccine came out, they were all expected to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hold on a second. You want people who were not in the study because they're a risk factor now to take it. Did they not become a risk factor afterwards? And the same thing with children. I just looked yesterday at all the exclusions of children in this tiny study. It's only a little over 2,000 kids, and two-thirds of them have received the vaccine. The others received placebo. And already I'm thinking, wow, they're excluding all children with autoimmune conditions. We have never in American history had this many kids with autoimmune conditions, with asthma, with arthritis, adult diabetes in children. So you're excluding all these children, so you're only getting children who have no problem, and yet you want to give it to all those other children. Well, what kind of medicine and what kind of science is that? And this also happened in Israel. Could you tell us the Israeli lesson, what has been learned, and how we should be very concerned how that might apply to America?
Well, not yet, because, I mean, the data is still coming in. We're the testing site, so everyone should look here to see what's going to happen in their country next. I mean, we've been saying that for forever. The people who are on the ground watching this unfold. When you hear it said so blatantly, I mean, that's all anyone needs to hear. Again, the exclusion criteria list is a list of things that if you fit inside, you cannot participate in a phase three clinical trial. And these lists are very long. So you want relatively healthy people in a clinical trial. So pregnant women are always excluded. Children are always excluded because we don't want to hurt them. Of course not. Notice my intonation. So it seems to me very odd that all of these people, including people with autoimmune conditions, people with cancer, are now they're being told, of course it's safe for you to get these injections, when there's absolutely no long-term safety data or no long-term data at all to support that claim. The phase three trial was only 6 months. How is it possible that they can make claims, safety claims for pregnant women when a human pregnancy takes 9 months? I mean, there's no physically possible way for them to make that claim. And you don't have to go farther than that, ladies and gentlemen. You just don't. There's no long-term safety data. There will be data that's coming in now, but it doesn't look good. That's my job. I'm here to kind of make that data easy to interpret. That's what I'm trying to do to help people see. The data coming in does not look good. And I'm talking about the US data. I haven't gone deep into the Israeli data. And there's a really good reason for that. It's because there is no adverse event collection system for this country, which is shocking, but that's the truth.
To experiment so with an entire population?
And not have an adverse event collection system. Yes, that's the reality. That in itself should make you scratch your head. If you know, you don't need to know anything. It's just common sense. If there's a product, a pill, a new dietary supplement, a new kind of cereal, if there's something that every single person of a population of people is being told they have to try, then you have to monitor what happens to those people as a result. And you have to do it for a long time. And before you even do that, you have to see what those effects might be by testing on people who volunteer, who know the risks. That's called informed consent ahead of time. None of that's being done here. It's absolutely insane, the rapidity at which this entire thing is progressing. I don't just mean the rollout. I mean the acceptance. I mean the acceptance of silly mandates that make zero. You can't tell me what to do. That's how I feel. This is my body. You can never, ever, ever, ever tell me what I need to do with my body. I'm perfectly healthy. If there's a flu going around, then I'll go get it. I don't care. I'll get over it. No big deal. Kids have been getting colds forever. Like, what is the big deal here? Because that's what this is for kids. It's a bad cold. Yeah, it's bizarre.
I want to end with this. This is a quote from an article with Steve Kirsch, Matthew Crawford, and yourself. All outstanding reputations, by the way. And we looked in everyone's background. No controversies, though I believe that now you're going to be the subject of attack. I'm sure you're emotionally prepared for that. But for a lot of very orthodox people in science and medicine who were just telling that what they considered the truth against misrepresentations in the official narrative, they were surprised when they were attacked by the mainstream media and the government. Here's what you write, and if I have your permission, I will post this article. It's just an article. It's not peer review. It's not for publication. Elsewhere, it's just something that you put up there, the three of you. It's entitled Estimating the Number of COVID Vaccine Deaths in America. And if I have your permission, I'll post it, but I want to read one paragraph, a short paragraph, from the article. Critical appraisal of Veris pharmacovigilance. Is the U.S. Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, Veris, a functioning pharmacovigilance system? Quote, using this URF, for all Veris classified SAEs, estimates to date are as follow: 205,809 dead, 818,462 hospitalizations, 1,830,891 emergency room visits, 230,113 life-threatening events, 212,691 disabled, and 7,998 birth defects to date, end quote. So it's simple math, community. So good for you. I consider all of you who are working on this and posting this based on your scholarship to be modern-day heroes. So you get a thumbs up for us for all the good stuff you're done and the risk that you're taking, because you know there's going to be a risk and you know there's going to be a blowback. So that's
well, truth is truth. So, I mean, if you stand in truth, you're pretty solid. And I make a very strong point of always double checking, triple checking myself and aligning myself with others who have benevolent motives, and seeking truth and knowledge is always benevolent. So, yeah, always be revealed.
I agree. And you've been listening during the Progressive Commentary Hour to Dr. Jessica Rose. And just so you know, she's an immunologist. She's a molecular biologist. She has published extensively. Her research is impeccable. She has had no controversy, no attacks against any of her scholarship. She's done a lot of research and a lot of publications and review, hepatitis B, cytomegalovirus, HIV, and anthrax. And so she is one of those people who had the courage to look at the facts, see that they were wrong, and then bring the correct facts to the American and world public's attention. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Gary Paul. Thank you for listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Have a nice day.